Welcome to the Sunday morning Bible study at Whitestone Christian Fellowship, taught by Pastor Bob Lorenz. We're located in the village of Victor, a little southeast of Rochester, New York. Pastor Bob teaches line by line and verse by verse from the Word of God. Now, let's join this week's Sunday morning Bible study, already in progress.
Our reading this morning is from Isaiah 21, verses 6 through 9, and our teaching is in Revelation chapter 17. Last week we looked at the seat of the beast, which is the Antichrist. Who is the Antichrist? And this week we're looking at the seat of the false prophet. Between the two of them, they are our world leaders coming to be, and things are aligning in such a way, politically, financially, socially, in every which way, even religiously, with the culmination of the events that we're going to read about today that are still yet in the future. But this is an important chapter, because it pulls chapter 15, chapter 16, and the beginning of 17 all together. And John even goes ahead and he gives us an understanding of who all of these people are, what they're doing, how we can identify them, and all the rest. So this is an important chapter to give us understanding of what we're dealing with. It's interesting that when Babylon fell and was no more, that the priesthood from Babylon was looking for a new home. And they went where the money was. And Pergamum in Asia Minor was a central location where finances and trade routes went. And they ended up in Pergamum, the priests from Babylon. And they eventually, and you can look this up in any decent encyclopedia. I'm not sure that you're going to find it on Wikipedia online. You'll have to look at an older edition of world history in an encyclopedia. But nonetheless, eventually, Pergamum was taken over by the Roman Empire. And so there's a number of books that have been written about Babylon and its application for today and for what it was and for what it is today. And we are heading in that direction. And I don't want to say the Roman Catholic Church is key, but it is a Roman establishment that is moving towards world power. And I believe that's one of the reasons why the Roman Catholic Church is so focused on the ecumenical movement of bringing all faiths together in one. They've been doing that since the 1960s with John Paul the 23rd, with John the 23rd as Pope, but all the other popes have been right in step with the ecumenical movement and bringing everybody together again under one church. So it's a really interesting study we're going to do today. Bear with us. It's going to open your eyes, I hope. It'll open our understanding to what the Scriptures have been telling us. And this is not the first time it's been telling us. It's been telling us this all the way along in the book of Revelation. So that's where we're heading today. I listened to an interesting podcast from my friend Amir over in Israel yesterday, and he is a great one to update about the news in Israel, events, social events and military events. And he said that 2 days ago, the Iranian military leaders that are serving in Syria and promoting and backing Hezbollah in Lebanon, they sent a couple of high-powered drones southward over Israel. These were unmanned military drones, and they were heavily armed. And he said if they had gotten through to their intended targets, Beirut would not exist as of yesterday. But they did not get through. So Beirut lives another day. Things are heating up in the Middle East between the Hamas attack on October the 7th and the things that are going on with Hezbollah in Lebanon attacking from the north. Finding that within Israel's borders, they have their enemies fighting against them and surrounding them in their neighbors, sending attacks and plotting against them. Hamas has said publicly that they are not interested in a two-state resolution to the issues between Hamas, the Palestinians, and the Jews. But if that's what they can use to gain recognition in Israel, that's what they will use. But their goal is not only from the sea to the river, but it's also from Rosh to Rosh. Rosh HaNikra, along the northern border and the southern border as well. So this is really, it's really interesting. Sweden is preparing their people for war, a coming war. They are seeing that the shipping through the Red Sea has come to nearly a complete halt with the Houthi rebels that are attacking foreign shipping and trade routes. And the people of Finland and the Norwegian area, they are seeing things going on across the bay and across the fjords in Russia that tells them that Russia is up to something as well. So when we're reading today's passage, we are really close. That last war could break out at any time. So we need to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem. We need to be praying for the wisdom of the Israeli Defense Force leaders and the courage and the strength of all of their army. The plans of Hamas and the Palestinians are to take over Israel and to drive all of the Jews into the sea. And then they'll come after the Christians and the United States after that. They're seeking worldwide domination. And some of that is what we're going to be reading about today as we get into the passage. But for now, and if you're just tuning in this morning on the internet, we ask you to turn to our reading from Isaiah chapter 21, verses 6 through 9. We'll read that together. And then we'll continue into Revelation chapter 17 as we look at the seat of the false prophet, the next target that Christ wants to undo. From Isaiah 21, verses 6 through 9. For thus hath the Lord said unto me, Go, set a watchman, let him declare what he seeth. And he saw a chariot and a couple of horsemen, a chariot of asses and a chariot of camels, and he hearkened diligently with much heed, and he cried, "A lion, my Lord, I stand continually upon the watchtower in the daytime, and I am set in my wand, in my ward, whole nights. And behold, there cometh a chariot of men with a couple of horsemen." And he answered them and said, "Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her gods he hath broken into the ground." This is not the first time that we've heard that Babylon is fallen in the scripture passages, in the prophets. There are many other passages that relate to this as well. And it's interesting that when Babylon fell, it fell to the Persians and the Medes. It was utterly destroyed and taken over by foreign powers, the Persians, Iran, and Iraq, and the Midianites. As the priests of Babylon were looking for a place to run to escape, they set their eyes on a major city that was very wealthy along the trade routes of Asia. They settled into Pergamos in Asia Minor, a place that Paul ministered to through his letters, a place that is mentioned in the book of Revelation in chapter 2, verse 17. And it's interesting that that's where their priests set up all of their continued idolatry. So when we look at the church at Pergamum, they were in the midst of great idolatry brought in from a foreign land. And eventually, Pergamum was incorporated into the Roman Empire. It kind of sets the stage because we see a lot of the secular descriptions of the robes that the priests of Babylon would wear. We see the traditions that they held. And we see the personhood, and I should say personhoods, that they worshipped. They worshipped the Queen of Heaven and her miraculously born son, exactly as Rome is doing today and has been since the time of Christ. It sets the stage for what we're going to read today in Revelation chapter 17. Now in chapter 15 and 16, we got a lot of information. And sometimes it's confusing when you receive a lot of information all at once. But John is going to continue to give us more information about this unholy alliance that the false prophet and the Antichrist have. It was also called the beast. And it's interesting that Napoleon did the same thing as what is going to be described here today. In his desire to profligate and to expand his his empire in Europe, Napoleon embraced the Christian church. But in about 1522, after he had gained the support of the church in Europe, he basically set it aside and said, I don't need you anymore. I have the power. And that's what we're going to be reading about today as we look at this passage, this chapter 17. Now, we just finished the seven angels with the seven bowls of judgment that were to be poured out upon all the earth. Last week, we had a picture on the front of the bulletin of angels coming down and carrying these bowls on the front of our bulletin. But these bowls are not just bowls that are carried by one or two people. These bowls are bowls designed by God. They're to be poured out upon all the earth, all seven of them. How big are these bowls of judgment? How potent they must be when we think of the judgment that is coming to this one world system designed by Satan, overseen by the Antichrist, and worshipped and praised by the false prophet. And so we start out with John here in verse 1 of chapter 17, and he says, there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials or bowls, and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. He begins to describe a personality, a person. And the first thing that we learn is that this great whore, and this is a spiritual whore, one who takes us away from the worship of God and subjects us to the lies of Satan in promoting herself and the grand plan that Satan has to be laid out by the Antichrist. And the first thing that we see about her is that she sits upon many waters. This is a description of a worldwide organization, a worldwide community, a worldwide faith system, because this is the false prophet. And just as Jesus had brought judgment upon the seat of the beast in the previous chapter, he has to continue because the seat of the false prophet is where she has all her power. And she sits on many waters, across oceans, across seas, ruling from her own seat. And it describes her a little bit further and her activities. She sits upon many waters with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. It's really interesting. This is like a Jeffrey Epstein island, except it's worldwide. During the Middle Ages, one of the most corrupt popes was Pope Leo VII, who openly lived in the Vatican with his wife, and they had a son, who eventually also became a pope. When we think of the many sins of the Vatican over the years, and we have to remember that these are priests which took vows of celibacy, this is a corrupt system that in the Middle Ages they would receive money for indulgences. They would be requested, and the priesthood required that if somebody was planning on sinning, they could pay for an indulgence ahead of time. And because during the Middle Ages and during the times of the Roman Empire especially, they gained much power. They gained much in the way of filling their coffers with money based on sin. And there have been many other popes. And they all basically wear the same garb, the same robes as the Babylonian priests. There are several good books to read. Sir Robert Anderson, a man retired from Scotland Yard, he wrote a book called Babylon Then and Now. We have Alexander Hitzloff, who wrote a book called The Two Babylons. We have a more modern writer, 20th century writer, Dave Hunt, who wrote a book called The Woman That Rides the Beast. And we also have an interesting fellow from the 19th century. We have Father Charles Chinookie. And he wrote a book entitled 50 Years in the Catholic Church. And it is basically an expose about how the church justifies its sin. All of these books are well documented. In verse 2, we have the second identifying factor. First was that the great whore sits on many waters. The second, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. They've gotten used to fornication. Spiritual fornication, physical fornication. When we think of a pope living openly in the Vatican with his wife, how does that comport with Roman Catholics? And how did that affect the papacies that came behind it? We had a very strict pope two popes ago, Cardinal Ratzinger. And he was very strict about following the dogma of the Roman Catholic Church to live up to its name and its reputation. And they voted him out of that office within a few years. They declared health reasons. And we now have a pope by the name of Francis that once he got into office, once he was raised up to the office of the papacy, there was a lot of commotion. There was a lot of controversy about the gay communities around the world. And I mean around the world. And Pope Francis was asked, how will you address the gay community during your papacy? Homosexuality is condemned in every religion except the Buddhist religion. It is condemned in Islam. It is condemned in Christianity. It is condemned in Judaism. It's condemned in the Bible. But Pope Francis's response was, well, who am I to judge? My God, you're the head of the church. You have the authority of the scriptures. And his response is, who am I to judge? And what's interesting that he did not come from the normal priesthood. Pope Francis is of a Jesuit background from a socialist country, Argentina. When the scriptures condemn something as vehemently as they do as homosexuality, you would think the Pope would say something that didn't represent his own personal opinion, but you would think he would take them back to the scriptures and say, here's what God says about it. You see, individual ideas and thoughts and values are as fickle as the human race. We can adapt to anything. We can accept anything. And what we have found is that the gay communities have an agenda, and that is acceptance around the world. And we have found it because they are out of the closet. They're out of the closet, wherever they go. Gay pride parades. Gay festivals in a wide variety of islands around the world. So she has made the world drunk with the wine of her fornication. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. In verse 3, I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. We'll talk about these 7 heads a little bit more later. But when we talk about 10 horns, we're talking about horns of authority, or kings and kingdoms. And even as we talk about the Roman Empire and its influence upon the church, at the time of the Caesars, it was a time of such debauchery with intermarriages of all different kinds. And when we talk about those seven, seven heads, there were seven Caesars who engaged in such debauchery that it was notable among the Romans that it was a kingdom where you could go and play and have all of your sexual desires fulfilled, particularly with the later ones, Caligula, Nero. But that's the culture that the Roman Catholic Church settled into. So she's sitting on a scarlet-colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. When you see an organization like this that's associated with a culture such as this is being described, that's another identifier that we need to look at and consider. We were left with so many questions about how far spread the kingdom of the Antichrist had become. And we know that the Antichrist was wounded with a severe head wound. And the scriptures say that it was a deadly wound. That means it was a fatal wound. And yet Antichrist was raised back up again. Miraculously. By the powers of darkness, the powers of the great dragon, Satan himself, to continue his plan for the earth. You may remember in Isaiah 14, Lucifer said, "I will raise myself up. I will be like the Most High." He didn't say he'd replace the Most High. He said, "I'll be like the Most High. I'm going to be a God in my own right." And the Apostle Paul refers to him in the epistles as the God of this world. So we have three things that help identify this group and their interaction and their association with one another. And the woman in verse 4 was arrayed in purple and scarlet color. When we look at this word scarlet, in Latin, it means cardinal, red, red like the cardinal bird. And they're decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, and having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. It speaks of the wealth. It speaks of the wealth that this organization has, this one that sits on many waters, this worldwide organization. Now, I'm not going to say that this is the Roman Catholic Church per se, because what's coming out of the Roman Catholic Church is a conditioning. And what it will be is a church like no other church before, with their focus on the ecumenical movement It will be a worldwide church, gathering everybody, all religions, all faiths, under one religious umbrella. But the Roman Catholic Church will be instrumental in bringing it to pass. There will be a one world religion. Having a golden cup full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication, carrying with her on the beast this golden cup with all little mementos of her history of fornication, spiritual fornication, idolatry, as well as abominations. And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery Babylon, the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Well, I guess we don't need much more to say that this isn't another identifier of who she is. She's going to have that name written on her forehead. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great, and the word is admiration, but it's better translated wonder or astonishment. If it's admiration, it's how could one person have gained such support around the world? You have the blood of martyrs of Jesus. During the Middle Ages, the Roman Catholic Church was the largest persecutor of biblical Christianity. The Spanish Armada was sent out to different countries, different colonies. And their directive was to go persecute Christians. When we think of the modern day problems in Ireland between Northern Ireland and Ireland proper, it's the Protestants against the Catholics. The Protestants in the north who practice a biblical form of Christianity, a more biblical form of Christianity than what the Catholic South does. The Catholic South is almost purely Roman Catholic. And Catholic is interesting because it is a word that means universal. So hidden within their name is their hope for a universal church. And we're meeting here in this building, which prior to the American Civil War was built as a universalist church. Universalists would meet up here in the sanctuary. But downstairs, while this region was still being built up, the Universalists would meet up here in the sanctuary, and the Roman Catholics would meet in the basement of this church, in our fellowship hall. And they stayed there until they built the church just up the street from us a little ways. But while she's sitting on this beast, the scarlet beast, arrayed in her purple and scarlet color, decked with gold, precious stones, literally exuding her wealth and letting everybody know it. I saw her drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great astonishment. We have not been taught to think about the Catholic Church as anything but a religion that spreads its faith in foreign countries, and many of their priests have been martyred by native tribes and by people who do not agree with the faith. But among biblical Christians, there is no one that persecuted those biblical Christians like the Roman Catholic Church has done. It's another book that you can read, Fox's Book of Martyrs, and it chronicles the thousands upon thousands of martyrs that the Church of Jesus Christ, not the Roman Church, Jesus' Church, has killed. Persecuted them, burned them at the stake. Executed them. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and the beast that carried her. It's interesting. We read earlier in verse 3 about the woman sitting upon a scarlet-colored beast. She's riding the beast. And when we think of a rider on an animal, we think of the rider having control. And here it says, apparently she's deceived, because the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carried her. It's the beast that has control, not the rider, which had 7 heads and 10 horns. 7 leaders and 10 horns total. The beast that thou sawest was and is not. The beast that they saw? The Antichrist, he died of a deadly head wound. He was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. He's going to come again. He's going to make another appearance. And later on in the book of Revelation, we read that Satan is cast into the bottomless pit for a season. And he comes back to make war with Jesus Christ and with the saints of heaven. So the beast that you saw, he was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. He was alive, he was not alive, and yet he's coming again. Here's the false prophecy about the beast, mimicking our Lord Jesus Christ, who was alive, was crucified, was raised up, and promises to come again. Here's one part of the grand deception that we have to identify. And here is the mind which hath wisdom. So this wonderful angel that's talking with John is saying, I'm gonna let you know who all these people are. I'm gonna give you identifiers. I'm gonna give you descriptions. I'm going to let you know what to expect. Because God does not want his people to be deceived. He says, the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. It's kind of interesting. There's a lot of capitals of different countries that are built on a series of hills. But when it speaks of seven hills, it is unique to Rome. The seven heads, those would be the Caesars. They are seven on seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. These are the seven kings. Five are fallen. Five of them were killed by their own family members, plotted against. Five are fallen, and one is. The one that is, the one that remains, is Domitian. And the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. Now, there is going to come one that is not Domitian, but is going to mimic Domitian's reign over the earth, over the Roman Empire. He's not going to be raised up again. But he is going to be mimicked by his successor. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven. Someone else's reign is going to be mimicked. The beast, the Antichrist, is going to mimic one of the other seven. He came from the other seven, and it's going to be that mindset and that agenda that he has to control all the earth. You can read about that a little bit in Daniel chapter 7. And the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. So here's another identifier, that when the beast regains power, he's going to appoint ten kings with him. When the European Union was formed and they were going to form their own financial group and created the euro dollar, it was thought that these are the 10 kings, but there turned out to be 10 or 15 of them. So the European Union is not the 10 kings, but it's going to be a close imitation. There are 10 kings. They received no kingdom as yet, but they receive power as kings for 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength to the beast. Antichrist at this particular stage is coming back, and he is going to be supported by 10 kings, whoever they may be. They have one mind, and shall give their power and strength to the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. You can read about this group coming back to wage war against the Antichrist in Revelation chapter 19, which we're coming to very soon. And he said unto me, and this is the angel again, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, they are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. It's every nation. In fact, it's these 10 kingdoms plus all anybody who supports them. The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth upon, they are people and multitudes and nations and tongues. John is breaking it down for us to be able to read and understand. The angel is giving him this information to pass along to us as we read this. And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, the whore where this whore sitteth, people, multitudes, nations, and tongues, and the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore. What? These shall hate the whore. You can see that they really hate her because she thinks she's in charge. She thinks she's directing when the beast itself has its own agenda. They shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. The beast is going to say to the false prophet and the great whore, I have all I need. I don't need you anymore. Just like Napoleon did with the church when he thought he had gained enough power. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom under the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Those are all of the wonderful promises that he has given to his people and to his church. Those are the words of God that are going to be our salvation. And the word of the Lord is giving it to us. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. So we have all the identifiers we need. When we see these things come to pass, when we see these things happening, when we see these people being raised up with the identifications that we've just been given, and we understand that we have to look upon them with spiritual eyes, and we have to listen to their words with spiritual ears, and we have to judge with God's righteous judgment. Because yes, it's a physical power over the earth and over the governments of the earth. But it is rooted in this darkness of the spirit realm, the deepest darkness of the spirit realm. This is Satan wanting to take over the world. This is Satan wanting to displace the Lord God Almighty. As the Babylonians worship the Queen of Heaven, the Muslims also have their own Queen of Heaven. Her name is Fatima, a daughter of Muhammad. And it's interesting that that same spelling of Fatima is pronounced differently by the Roman Catholic Church. She is called Our Lady of Fatima as she presented herself to a group of small children. A miraculous vision seen by these children. See, the grand deception is already in place. It's coming. The implications of all these imposters are in place. We have been taught to not look upon these things spiritually. Our Lady of Guadalupe is another vision that was presented by the Queen of Heaven. And she has over her head 12 stars and a moon under her feet, the exact image of Fatima that is worshipped in Islam. But people don't know it. The media won't report it. The Vatican won't support it and tell us that it's all part of their plan. All I can say is that the Roman Catholic Church will come to an end, and this new basis of worship will be something like we've never seen before. But we know what it looks like, we know what it sounds like, and we know who's set their agenda. So be prepared. This is a vital chapter in the book of Revelation. John gives us so many visions and dreams. And it's all one revelation to John because it's continual and it's chronological. As it says in chapter 1, I think verse 19, it says, John, write the things which were, the things which are, and the things which shall be. It's an outline for the whole book. It's the past, it's the present, and it's the future. And it's a warning for all of us. So keep your spiritual ears on. Watch and judge with God's judgment. And it's interesting that the world looks upon this as religion. But when the word religion is mentioned in the Bible, it's never in a positive sense. Religion binds you up, commits you to a path of the religious leaders of that particular religion. Like the Jewish priests bound up the Jews and manipulated them like slaves. Every religion does that. But in the book of James, religion is mentioned in one positive reference. And that is that pure religion and undefiled religion is that we would visit the orphans and the widows and those that cannot help themselves. That's our goal in this world, is to reach out and assist those that seem helpless, that seem rejected, that seem forgotten, that seem unloved. That's what God calls us to do. That's compassion and empathy. The very things that Jesus rebuked the Pharisees and the Sadducees for in Matthew 23:23. It's just an amazing revelation that John has given us and continues to give us, because it's still yet in the future what we've been reading of late. So stay tuned. When you're listening or reading in the media about events, read with spiritual eyes and hear with spiritual ears. God bless you. Have a wonderful week in the Lord. Be encouraged by John's words to us today. He's given us a lot of tools to identify so that we are truly forewarned about the coming events in this world. From Psalm 67, verses 1 and 2, God be merciful to us and bless us and cause his face to shine upon us, that thy way may be known upon earth, thy saving health among all nations. God bless you. Stay tuned for chapter 18. There's more excitement coming. Read ahead if you would like, and be blessed.
Thank you for listening to the Sunday Morning Bible Study at Whitestone Christian Fellowship, taught by Pastor Bob Lorenz. To access the list of teachings or to check the archives for Pastor Bob's weekly Bobservations column, log on to WhitestoneCF.com. There you can also check the weekly schedule and any upcoming events. To contact us or to drop a note to Pastor Bob, you can email us at WhitestoneCF@gmail.com or call us at 585-924-8820. Whitestone Christian Fellowship is a non-denominational congregation. Every Sunday, Pastor Bob walks us through the Bible, teaching line upon line and verse by verse. And we're located in the village of Victor, a little southeast of Rochester, New York. And if you're in the area, we invite you to visit us. From upstate New York, Pastor Bob encourages all of us to immerse ourselves in the Word of God. Until next time, remember that Jesus is our Victor. Stay close to him.